Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Pella Window and Door of Georgia, viewed to be the best.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
So I think if you wanted to try to design a storyline to make the hot topic around Georgia football right now seem even more confusing, maybe a little bit more mysterious, I think the events of Saturday probably get that done for you. Let me acknowledge a couple of things off the top, then we'll kind of dive into what the rumors, the whispers, the reports are about where things stand with the Georgia quarterback competition right now. You have probably heard maybe some other media outlets reporting that Georgia quarterback Dwan Mathis has really made a run at the starting quarterback job for Georgia, putting a lot of pressure on JT Daniels, impressing in his own right during practice, maybe even now putting himself in a position to be the Georgia starter. Those reports are out there. I'm not going to pretend they don't exist. Many of you have read those. You're aware of what's being said. There's also the rumor, you know, kind of conjecture that, well, you know, on the heels of Jamie Newman deciding to opt out for the season, that he was pushed out the door by the emerging JT Daniels. And Daniels is destined to be the Georgia starting quarterback. That's why Newman isn't here anymore. Many of you have kind of maybe heard some of that kind of stuff be said, and that's kind of out there a little bit. So then you get to Saturday, which was an opportunity for some people, the very moneyed, erudite, elite McGill Society donors, to go inside Sanford Stadium, get a chance to be a part of the scrimmage that takes place there. And let me tell you something. There is no bigger sewing circle in the world than college football fans. The rumor mill gets kind of heated up pretty quick. So pretty quickly on the heels of what happens inside Sanford Stadium, many of us start hearing from people who were there and a part of that scrimmage. It's just natural. It's just the way things are going to go. The appetite for Georgia information never goes down. Sometimes the availability of information goes down. And when there's a difference between the appetite and the availability, someone is always going to step in to try to fill that void. In this particular case, it's donors with a chance to be a part of the scrimmage. And here is what I've heard. Many of you have heard this too. You know people who were there. Some of you watching, listening right now were actually a part of this. You were inside Sanford Stadium. What I was told was that there was about a 30-minute period that was very similar to a regular game, right? You know, offense against defense, very similar type of scrimmage, couple of quarters worth maybe. And in that early portion, about a half an hour's worth of football, Georgia quarterback Dwan Mathis was the only quarterback to go with the number one offense. And in that period, Georgia quarterback JT Daniels, I was told, did not play at all. And when the number two offense was on the field, Carson Beck was going exclusively with the number two offense. There was a brief period, kind of like what you might think of, sort of like a halftime for the for the other players, where the number threes were out there. Stetson Bennett was running with them, and we didn't really see, or the people who were there didn't really see JT Daniels at all until like the second portion of that scrimmage, when it was situational football. I was told it was like, in some cases, red zone work, in some cases, like third and long type work, you know, situational moments during a game. And that was the portion in which JT Daniels got a chance to play. So as I said off the top of the program, if you're trying to design a storyline that I would say complicates, adds to the mystery of what's already going on with the Georgia quarterback situation, I think that particular description of what happened on Saturday really, I think, adds to that drama pretty well, because here's what's going to happen. Assuming it's correct, and at this point in time, the people, you know, who I've talked to have pretty good eyesight. I'm assuming that they're telling me the truth about what they saw. And so you take these facts as they are understood. Mathis playing almost exclusively with the ones for the majority of the scrimmage. Daniels, in the brief period of time he did play, playing situational moments with the ones later on. There are some people who are going to take that news and say, well, this proves it. Dwan Mathis is the starting quarterback for the Georgia Bulldog. And I guess maybe there's a chance that is true. I mean, maybe that is. I mean, maybe you would just play your starting quarterback the majority of the time in a scrimmage like this. You want to see what he's got, what he's able to do, heading towards Arkansas two Saturdays from now. I mean, maybe it is just that simple. Maybe this was evidence that now Dwan Mathis is the starting quarterback. However, there are other people, and I think it was kind of explained to me this way, was like, well, maybe this was like the fourth NFL preseason game where, you know, the starting quarterback typically doesn't play very much in that scenario. So maybe they already know what JT Daniels is able to do. Maybe they're just willing to kind of let him sit out and not play here and away from the watchful eye of fans, the watchful eye of former Letterman, and we'll get to that in a moment, away from the watchful eye of all this kind of stuff. They'll put JT Daniels back to work more in practice coming up over the course of the next couple of weeks leading into Arkansas coming up on September the 26th. And maybe that's kind of true, too. Maybe Daniels, who does have experience being the starting quarterback in major college football before, and I have said that I've valued experience in this race. I assume that Jamie Newman had the leg up when he was here because of the experience. I assumed that JT Daniels had the leg up once Newman was not here anymore because Daniels had the experience. Maybe this is one of those things where Daniels really is the starter, but why risk him getting hurt any more than he kind of already has been? No need to go out there and push that. As I said before, the way it was kind of described to me, of maybe this was just kind of a fourth preseason game, the way you typically have seen in the NFL. And I guess that's a possibility. The other thing that's a possibility here is, you know, Kirby Smart has said that he expects JT Daniels to be cleared and able to play full tackle football when Georgia gets going here in a couple of weeks. But maybe right now that just still hasn't happened yet. I was told that Daniels wasn't wearing a full-on knee brace. I was told that it was something like a sleeve, you might want to call it. You know, one of those like sort of compression deals. Many of you wear these things when you're, you know, running around in the parks and things like that as it is. So I was told it's not full-on knee brace for Daniels anymore, but maybe he is a little more hurt than maybe someone like I would have assumed. That's at least a possibility coming up on all of this, too. The honest truth is I don't quite know what to make of all of this, don't quite know what to think. I have assumed, and this is where I kind of get in trouble, I can be too cynical, I can be a little too much of a contrarian thinker. When I hear one thing, I have a tendency to start wondering if the exact opposite might be true. When I've heard these rumblings about Dwan Mathis and what he's been doing at practice over the last few days, my assumption would be that that was all designed by the sources who provided that information, all designed to be a way of motivating JT Daniels, to get the most out of him, to push him to truly step up and emerge. It reminds me a lot of what we saw here with this program back in 2017, when we all assumed that Jacob Eason would be the beginning of the year starter. Yet that offseason was filled with praise for Jake Fromm. Now, as it turns out, I do believe that Fromm is a better quarterback than Jacob Eason, at least at Georgia. But at the time, it was the pushing of Fromm as a way of hopefully pushing Eason to be the best he possibly could be. When I heard the praise for Dwan Mathis, I kind of wonder if this is the same part of that all over again. No disrespect to Mathis. I think he's a pretty good player in his own right. But as I said before, my bias has been experience should matter. The Newman experience would have mattered for me. The Daniels experience matters now. When someone like Mathis is praised who hasn't played before, I have a tendency, maybe wrongly, but the cynical part of me, the contrarian part of me, has a tendency to assume, well, this must all be as a way of orchestrating the best out of JT Daniels in the final moments before the season begins. Now, someone who went on the record by what he saw at the scrimmage was former Georgia quarterback Aaron Murray. You may have read these quotes at DogNation.com. Murray talked about Daniels. Murray talked about Carson Beck. But I want to focus in for a moment here in particular on what Aaron Murray had to say about Dwan Mathis, because after everything that had been written from a lot of sources, a lot of places about Mathis over the last few days, Mathis getting, as I was told, the lion's share of the snaps with the number one offense on Saturday, he was, to a degree, kind of the man of the hour. So Aaron Murray goes to Twitter, and this is what Murray says on video, and I'm going to have to read these quotes to you for a reason I'll explain in a moment. But this is Murray talking to Dwan Mathis. He says, speaking with Todd Monken before, one guy we both felt has a lot of potential, a lot of upside, is Dwan Mathis. He was actually given the nod yesterday to get with the ones in the first half to start the scrimmage off, and he didn't disappoint. I thought he looked really comfortable in the system. Aaron Murray would go on to say via Twitter video that he's a kid with a lot of upside. Big arm, athletic. He showed that both inside the pocket, outside the pocket, and had some great runs in the first half as well. I think he's someone you continue to work with, has a chance to be pretty darn special, just needs those live in-game reps. That's Aaron Murray talking to Dwan Mathis via a video on Twitter. What adds to the mystery in all of this, though, is for some reason, and there's nothing, you can read the entirety of the quotes, Mike Griffith's got it up at DogNation.com, For some reason, Aaron Murray then deleted that video. In other portions of that brief Twitter video, he talked about JT Daniels looking good, hoping to hear that he gets to full health here pretty soon. He says, Murray, that he thought that Carson Beck looked the best of all the quarterbacks that participated in the scrimmage on Saturday. As I said before, I was told that Beck worked exclusively as the number two quarterback with the number two offense against the number two defense. I don't know that the people I talked to came away with the same conclusion on Beck that Murray seems to have. But listen, eyewitness accounts can be unreliable. Different people see the same car accident and come away with, not to say that the Georgia offense is a car accident, but different people see the same, you know, event and describe it in different ways. The people who I talked to who saw the scrimmage did not describe Beck the same way that Aaron Murray did, but that was Murray's take on all of this. So what does all of this mean? I honestly don't know, except to say this. Ultimately, who starts at quarterback for Georgia right now may not be the most significant issue. Now, obviously, it matters. Mathis and Daniels are also very different kinds of players. But I've told you this before. I've kind of hinted at it. I'm going to say it a little bit more vocally right now. I'm a fan. I want Georgia to win. I got the Georgia shirt on today. I want Georgia to have an incredible quarterback so they can have an incredible offense so they can win the national championship. Speaking as a fan here for a moment, I'm a little concerned where things stand at the moment. Not between, you know, Mathis and Daniels, who's the best, but the fact that maybe neither guy really distinguished themselves all that much. You've heard praise for Dwan Mathis, but I was told there were very few touchdowns in the scrimmage all the way around. Mathis, I was told, did throw a red zone touchdown to George Pickens. There was a third string touchdown, I was told. But for the most part, there just weren't a lot of touchdowns to be given all the way around. So we kind of fixate on, will it be Mathis? Will it be Daniels? But the bigger question may be, will the guy who emerges actually be effective once SEC play begins September 26th? I think the jury is still very much out on that. Listen, it's fun to do a Georgia show every day for Georgia fans because mostly the news is good. I'm not quite so sure yet if it's good news yet for the Georgia quarterback. This battle is ongoing. Hopefully the best guy emerges. But I have to be very honest here for a moment. At this particular time, I think this Georgia offense, led by one of these two quarterbacks, either Mathis or Daniels, is still very much a work in progress. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is DogNation.com. There is a DogNation.com. This doesn't happen to be it. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Good to have you with us, no matter how you get to us today. Video, 10 a.m., Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. We're on the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. We're available as a podcast wherever you find them, including the world-famous DogNation.com. Really appreciate you being a part of it. Huge thanks to our friends at Pella Window and Door of Georgia for all making it possible as well. You know, they can help equip your house with energy-efficient windows and doors. This is a really good thing. It keeps the energy inside. Air conditioning this time of year, you don't want it escaping out. Those energy-efficient windows and doors prevent that from happening. It could save you money on your bills. Also, the outside of your house is going to look better. That extra curb appeal could increase resale value. It'll certainly make your neighbors happy. So Pella Window and Door of Georgia, great to check out for all those things. You can get that free, no pressure consultation right now. Get great advice from a Pella expert. You can either do that via video teleconference right now, face-to-face, whichever one's more comfortable for you. They'll explain all the installation processes for you and all the options you have available. You also get a great deal right now between now and October 1st. 10% off vinyl, 15% off fiberglass, 20% off wood windows and doors, and no payments, no interest for 12 months. Incredible deal there. A couple ways for you to get in touch. How about online, PellaBranch.com. That's PellaBranch.com. Or you can give them a call in their Dunwoody showroom, 404-445-2979. That's 404-445-2979. Pella Window and Door of Georgia is viewed to be the best. All right, let's go around the doghouse here. We're going to get John Stinchcomb coming up as part of a Marlowe Stafford Insider Update. Before that, though, it is around the doghouse, assisted today by AAA. And let me talk about quarterback of the future for Georgia for a moment. After talking a good bit about the quarterbacks of the moment in the present for the Dogs, let's look ahead to what's going to happen for Georgia starting in 2021 based on what we saw Friday night. Great coverage by Dog Nation's Connor Riley, Dog Nation's Jeff Sintel, who are both on hand at Rabun County for the incredible matchup between Gunnar Stockton, the 2022 quarterback committed to South Carolina, Brock Vandegrift, the five-star 2021 quarterback on his way to UGA. It was a better night for Rabun County. Stockton's team gets the win over Vandegrift and Prince Avenue Christian after a pretty valiant comeback attempt by Prince Avenue to kind of get back involved in this game. And I guess for some people, there's going to be the takeaway that Stockton outplayed Vandergriff. Certainly Stockton's team wins the game, and Stockton had some big highlight moments. Ultimately for me, though, and I didn't watch the entire game, I'm not going to pretend that I did, but certainly watched a good bit of the early portion of the game. And what I saw from Vandergriff, I really liked. So if you came away with this, maybe with a less than full feeling about what Georgia's getting in Brock Vandergriff, my takeaway from you on that's going to be a pretty good bit different. I love the way that Vandergriff made some throws in the run. I think he's a big physical presence at the quarterback spot. I think this is the kind of guy that, at least to my eyes, now this is a different level of competition, obviously, than SEC football is going to be. And I think that overall, I think that Vandergriff had the inferior team in comparison to Rabid County. They just seemed to have the better players at most positions. But Vandergriff in particular here, I really felt like came across looking like a pretty competent and capable quarterback. As I said before, some throws in the runs, they didn't all result in completions. But the best that I could tell, I thought Vandergriff was putting the ball where it needed to go. Sometimes in the evaluation, process for a high school player, you have to look beyond the final score, look beyond the results of the game, look beyond who it is that each quarterback has on his side to help him. And I didn't think that Vandergriff had a bad showing in this game at all. After the game, Stockton, who was on the winning side for Rabun County and could eventually be lining up against Vandergriff for South Carolina, spoke to Jeff Sintel from Dog Nation and had some words of praise for the quarterback Vandergriff, who was across the field from him on Friday night.
He's a competitor, and to me, like being a competitor, I mean, that's the ultimate goal you can have. But he plays hard, and I grew up, we played, he played travel ball. We were all around together, but it was pretty cool just playing against him, and he played good.
And listen, let me not disparage Gunnar Stockton in all this, because I think Stockton is a very impressive player in his own right. If he ends up at South Carolina, Gamecocks have gotten themselves a good one. But I'd take Gunnar's words about Vandergriff at face value. I do think Brock proved himself to be a competitor. He's done that more times than not during his high school career, including Elite 11 and some of the stuff that went on this past summer. I like what I saw from Brock Vandergriff and can't wait to see more of him in his senior season of high school and eventually in a Georgia uniform there as well. It's Around the Doghouse. It's assisted today by our friends at AAA. You know, my family, we've been AAA members for a long time. We love the value that it gives us, peace of mind when it comes to roadside assistance, everything else. But that's not the only kind of value our friends at AAA can provide. They can also give you things like the AAA Savings Hack Pack. It's a great way to really save money because of your AAA membership, including benefits that are worth over $1,000, including free career assistance, identity theft protection, up to 85% off prescriptions, discounts on food and essentials when you're on the road. That's a great deal as well. The Hack Pack is part of every annual membership, and just like AAA's legendary roadside assistance, it'll take care of itself and pay for itself here really soon. So here's how you can find out more about this. Go to AAA.com/GoSavings. That's AAA.com/GoSavings. You can discover how quickly a AAA membership can pay for itself with you. All right, it's great to have you with us here today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door of Georgia. There were a few other rumors and whispers that I heard about the Georgia scrimmage from Saturday. I want to talk more about that before we're done today. But for now, on opinions about where things stand with the Dogs ahead of the upcoming season, let's get ready to talk to John Stinchcomb as part of a Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com Insider.
Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update time. We'll welcome in John Stinchcomb here. And John, a lot of chatter over the course of the last few days involving the Georgia quarterback situation. There were some folks who got a chance to be inside Sanford Stadium on Saturday for the third scrimmage ahead of Georgia's season start here in a couple of Saturdays. And as can be per usual with college football fans, there were some loose lips, people sharing some rumors about some things. And boy, it leaves you wondering, could a guy in Dwan Mathis, who only about a year or so ago had his football future completely in doubt, could he emerge as Georgia's starting quarterback? It'd be a great story if so. JT Daniels, who a lot of people thought, because he has some veteran experience, would be the guy once Jamie Newman was here. Is there a chance that's no longer true anymore, or is that still the way many have assumed it would be? What do you make of the rumors that are out there involving the Georgia quarterback situation right now?
Well, I think we're excited about the season, that we're going to have one, and there's so much uncertainty now that Jamie Newman is no longer a possibility, that it raises the the intrigue about the position, and folks are wanting to get a sneak peek. And is it going to be JT Daniels? Is it Carson Beck? Or most excitingly, and what we've heard recently is Dwan Mathis, who you just alluded to. You know, there were some questions as to whether he would even be medically cleared to play again. So, I think once Jamie Newman decided to step away because of COVID or otherwise, that's his stated reason, it opens the door for this kind of discussion, and people are going to take a small window that they have, and that's the opportunity that was availed to a few of us on Saturday for that scrimmage, and you expound upon it. You've got this limited set of information, and you're trying to draw these grand conclusions, but nobody knows like the coaching staff does. They're the ones who get to be in the meeting rooms with them, as well as the practice field on a daily basis. So you can pull a little away from these scrimmages, but it's hard to get a full picture off of 2 hours of practice.
Couldn't help but notice you used the first person plural pronoun, us, there. Does that mean that you were one of the former Lettermen in the stands on Saturday?
Well, I was invited. I was actually at my son's soccer game.
I see.
So, like many others, we're back engaged in some extracurriculars, but excited about some Georgia football, too.
Yeah, it was busy a weekend for us in that regard there as well. We had multiple sports going on, which is just kind of the way that goes this time of year. I guess let me say it this way, John. You know, I mentioned this to our audience a moment ago. Like, it's really fun being a Georgia fan, doing a show for Georgia fans in an era like this, because the news is almost always good, right? Georgia's been winning a lot of games, they've been getting a lot of recruits, and every day you get to come on the air and talk about good news, and it's just more fun to disseminate good news to Georgia fans. It just makes everybody happy, right? Good news is good for business. It always will be. So I kind of find myself in a little bit of a different position than I normally find myself in on a day like this, because speaking as a fan for a moment, and there's a chance that I'm overstating, you know, my concerns on this, but as of right now, you know, to me, it's sort of less about Daniels versus Mathis and who's going to merge, but it's about how confident is George going to be with the quarterback that it does go in to the start of the season with. Because the one thing that I think was pretty clearly said to me was, while there were some completions and, you know, for instance, Jermaine Burton had a nice catch and there was a red zone touchdown to George Pickens, for the most part, you know, neither of these quarterbacks was really finding the end zone all that much. It was, you know, maybe a day where there was some yards gained, but, you know, the goal is to put the ball in the end zone, and maybe there wasn't a ton of that. You know, I have to say, I've got some pretty big questions right now about the current state of this Georgia offense. I love Mathis. I would love to see him, you know, go on to have one of the great feel-good stories of all time. But if a guy that has not played emerges in a year in which Georgia thought it had two experienced quarterbacks, I'm obviously counting Newman, then what has transpired that's kind of led to this, you know, occurring? Maybe it's just Mathis outplaying them all, or maybe something, you know, unexpected kind of happened for the negative. I have to say, John, as of this moment, I do have a couple of concerns about where the current Georgia offense is kind of, the current state of it ahead of the upcoming season. Do you think that's a fair thing to say?
Well, I think that your concern and trepidation for fans right now is that we felt like we had a known commodity coming in with Jamie Newman, and that's a welcomed thing, considering you knew what you had with Jake Fromm, and he still had a year left of eligibility, and he decides to leave, so who's walking through the door? And when you get a guy like Jamie Newman to transfer in, it kind of puts those anxieties at ease. And when he steps away in the middle of training camp, obviously that's a cause for concern. You're going, oh no, what now? But let me help you out, BA. Let me get you excited about some other things, because George Pickens is an exciting player. These running backs, a more refined, a healthier Zamir White, man, that's exciting to me. The addition of not only a true freshman tight end, but also a veteran who, you know, is dealing with some health issues of his own. Those are exciting pieces. And you combine that with a defense that has so many returning starters and so many guys. there is a lot of supporting cast. Now, you can't ignore the quarterback position. I recognize that. I think it's the number one position of need on any team, especially the way the game's played today. But there's so many other pieces around that as you go through these growing pains, and there will be growing pains with a new offensive coordinator and so many new pieces, and specifically with this quarterback. But the supporting cast is really strong, and they're going to be able to hopefully lift the ship, if you will, while he's, whoever that he is, gets up to speed.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Let me do one more thing on this, and we'll talk about a couple of other things here for a moment. Like, the one thing that I did hear coming out of this is that for people who are looking for some differences in the offense, that the people who were there on Saturday probably got some examples of that. You know, they did see men in motion, something that with receivers Georgia hasn't always done a ton in the past. You know, there were still some two tight end sets, but tight ends weren't putting their hand on the ground. They were lining up.
In
kind of the 2-point stand situation. There's a little bit of echo coming in here. We'll see if we can figure out what that is. But you know, so for the people who are looking to see some differences in the Todd Monken offense, looking to see, you know, some easier throws, something I don't think the offense of James Coley a year ago necessarily provided, that maybe for whichever of these quarterbacks emerges, the thing that could help not just the quarterback who starts, but the offense in general, is the fact that the Monken style of offense might create some easier yards, something that probably has been a little tough to come by for Georgia, maybe certainly last season, and maybe a little bit the last couple of seasons. So from that standpoint, that may be a silver lining to all of this.
Well, you got to be excited about Monken just because of his experience. You contrast that to a first-year offensive coordinator, although there was some experience in Miami. But nothing really compares to on-the-field training and on-the-job training as an offensive coordinator, where you start to understand the whys and you're not drinking from a fire hose of coordinating each week a game plan. Because there are ways to attack defenses that aren't just with personnel. You talk about those motions. You talk about, we used to call it, you got to blitz the defense. And to do that, you want them thinking about something other than just lining up and teeing off against your offense. And when you change personnel groups and you motion receivers and shift in out of different formations, that gets them thinking. As we all know, these defensive players, they're not the smart guys. If they were smart, they'd be playing offense, right?
Well said.
I say that in jest because they're usually more athletic and better than at least they were against their opponent when they were going up against me. So we tried to do everything we could to trick them and get them off their game. But I say that to say this. With a good coordinator, they recognize the strengths of their offense, but just as important is the weaknesses. And when you can not only just recognize it, but when you can do something about it, I think that distinguishes the good coordinators from the great ones.
It is our... go ahead, John.
Yep,
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
No, please. Finish your point.
That's it. Of when you've got a coordinator that has some wherewithal, they can recognize their weaknesses and then compensate for them. And if that means shorter throws or easier reads and less complication in the play and more dress up before and after, which is personnel groups and shifts, that only makes it easier for the guys that might need a little boost, if you will.
It is our Marlow Stavard Insider Update with John Stinchcomb here. John, I got some great news for our audience. One of the most popular promotions that's really ever happened at Marlow's Tavern is back. It's going on right now. You and I had a chance to take advantage of this last week. It's the Ribs and Whiskey, one of the great things that Marlow's has done, back for the first time this year in really quite some time. You can go to Marlow's Tavern to get more details about this, about how you can St. Louis-style ribs, smoky flavor, just delicious stuff. John, I know that you had a great lunch with me there the other day. Not great because of the company, but great because of the food. Boy, how much fun was the Ribs and Whiskey and really the entirety of those smoked meat selections that are available at Marlow's right now? How much fun was that the other day?
Well, not only was it fun, I did enjoy the company, but it was the food that really pushed it over the top. And I say that just because Marlow's is a sponsor and I'm grateful for them. But Then they just serve up good food.
Oh, yeah.
It makes you grateful when you can brag on a restaurant that not only is a friend of the program, but, man, they put out great product. And, you know, we're sitting there and you're hearing about how the ribs are fresh and, you know, it's not the prepackaged frozen ones. They're just reheating in a warmer oven. I mean, this is fresh stuff with the, you know, they're talking about 3 hours of prep work.
Yep.
And, you know, at the end of the day, you're like, well, don't tell me about the labor. Just show me the baby. And, man, that food was delicious. I mean, it was quite a meal. It's good to be back out. And, you know, I very much welcome the return of ribs and whiskey at Marlowe's.
So for me, I'm going to be getting the ribs when I go there. That's going to be my go-to thing because I think they're fantastic. But there's also, you know, there's pigs in a bun, which is kind of like a barbecue sandwich type, you know, style thing. There's some very, very tasty smoked salmon that you can kind of get a glaze with as well. Either like a couple of really cool options, you know, for all of that. So it's some great menu items. By the way, if you want these to go in the comfort of your own home, many of you right now still doing that when you choose to, eat. That's a great option as well. MarlowsTavern.com. You can find out more about that and really take great advantage of the ribs and whiskey promotion going on right now. Marlowe's Tavern, cheers to that. And certainly you'll be toasting big time with the ribs and whiskey event going on at the tavern right there in your neighborhood. John, let me shift gears back to Georgia football here for a moment. You were part of the UGA Athletic Board meeting going back to Friday. And I think for a lot of folks, there's some curiosity about the current state of things, both in terms of the finances for Georgia. I had some donors tell me that Kirby Smart was very complimentary of them for you know, maintaining their commitment to support Georgia financially in the midst of what's been a really challenging time. Maybe Georgia finding itself on better financial footing than some SEC programs might see itself right now. What was the overall takeaway that you got from having a chance to be a part of the athletic board meeting on Friday?
Well, it's great to be a Georgia Bulldog, I'll tell you that, because across the country, you know, there's shortfalls. You look at budgets, and the money is not going to be there. There's missed spring sports and still impact of COVID across the board, across the entire department. And you throw on top of that the arms race, if you will, that's existed across college campuses. Well, the benefit of being at Georgia is the donor base and the fan base, because a lot of the projects that, you know, the builds, there's so many new builds, not only in Georgia, but other campuses. But the difference is Georgia has been funded in real time and hasn't taken on a huge amount of debt, whereas other schools have. So for all those board meetings I've sat in where Ryan Nesbitt, who is the chief financial officer, and he's instructing us as to where all these funds are going and where they come. And at the end of the day, he's like, you know, best practices say, you know, an organization needs to have at least 6 months of funding sitting there if in case of, and you're going, in case of what? I mean, what's going to happen to an athletic department where you're going to shut down for 6 months? And, you know, and then it happened.
Yep.
So the fact that Georgia is so well positioned is it's due to a couple of things. And one, I think it's good leadership. I think Greg McGarrity and company need some of that credit. They deserve it. They've taken those steps and not taken on bad debt. And then the second entity that deserves recognition is the fan base. The fact that so many of these builds not only have occurred, but continue to occur, because we saw, you know, these diagrams of the new Buttsmere building, and it is in construction. I mean, these metal beams are being erected right now, and you can continue, whereas other programs have pressed pause and are going, man, how are we going to afford these things? Only because of the fan base that's gotten behind and continues to support the Georgia Athletic Department. So kudos to both entities.
Let me do one final thing here as part of our Marlowe's Tavern Insider update, kind of on the same subject. One of the other things that comes up on Friday, more of the details about what football is going to look like in and around Sanford Stadium this fall for the people that I've talked to who are in for the scrimmage on Saturday. They said the socially distant setup didn't look too bad. You know, they've got the chair back seats spread out throughout the stadium as a way of keeping people 6 feet apart. They said in a weird way, it didn't seem, you know, all that bad. It seems like it kind of looks like a regular home game, at least what I heard. Pretty positive reviews on that. I guess the tailgating situation is still up in the air just a little bit here. For the average Georgia fan who just kind of cares what his fall Saturday is going to look like, based on the conversations that you were part of, what can you kind of tell us about where all that stands at the moment?
Incredible job of trying to keep his thumb. He's the senior athletic deputy hack agent, and he's got so many different tag-alongs. He's one of the athletic directors in at Georgia, and his task has been to make sure that, one, you provide a safe game day experience for all Georgia fans, and two, what's everybody else doing? Like, let's figure out what are best practices. How can we ensure a safe environment, but also a great game day environment? So, when you look at all the numbers, you're looking at a capacity that's less than a third of what a normal game day would be. But man, they've really done their homework and due diligence and putting together a plan to keep people safe and still cheer on your dogs. And I don't know if you're like me, but watching some football yesterday, man, it was fun to see,
yeah.
But I could really do without that fake crowd noise. I'm a big proponent of real crowd noise, and even though it's closer to 24,000 and not 90-plus, I think having real fans in the stands makes a difference.
Yeah, I think you're right about that, John. I am looking forward to seeing some fans inside Sanford Stadium here coming up pretty soon, and just the return of SEC football all the way around. Nice to get a taste of football this weekend, but the brand of football we love the most is still a couple Saturdays away, so we'll batten down the hatches and get ready for that. John, thanks for being here as part of our Marlow's Tavern Insider Update. Appreciated the chance to share little ribs with you last week as part of the ribs and whiskey event at Marlow's Tavern, and I will look forward to getting a chance to speak to you soon as well.
Well, you know, now it means we have to go back and try the other items, not only on the front of the menu, but also the back. We didn't get to the second part of the ribs and whiskey, so next time.
I think that sounds like a good idea, John. We'll look forward to doing that very soon.
Thanks, PA. Go Dawgs.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
So a quick confession here for a moment. And by the way, great stuff from John Stinchcomb there as part of a Marlow's Tavern Insider Update. Sure enough, we had a great time with the Ribs and Whiskey event at Marlow's last week. And it's an ongoing promotion. I'm very picky about ribs. I love Marlow's ribs. They're very, very plump and meaty. They've got the smoky flavor that I really want. I love them. We had a great time. But a quick confession on a different topic here for a moment. So one of the things I really enjoy doing is I enjoy being at the stadium for games. I just have always been that way. You know, we're kind of in an age now where I think the television product has improved so much, the viewing experience at home has improved so much. There are a lot of people who maybe used to be like me, but have kind of now gravitated towards the experience of being on television, you know, best seat in the house, if you will, section HD, some people call it, you know, a chance to really, you know, be in the comfort of their own home, you know, great view. And I understand why people feel that way, but I'm the kind of person that really likes being at the stadium. And I've been pretty concerned over the last few weeks of, you know, you're going to get a chance to be in the stadium, especially for away games. How's that going to work? And so I've at least been kind of looking into the experience because, you know, one thing I'm always interested in, too, is for those of you who want to be at games, I want to make sure I understand the ticket situation. So I've been doing a little peeking at Fayetteville, Arkansas, coming up in a couple Saturdays. It's kind of funny. As recently as, like, Friday night, there were about, you know, a handful of tickets on one of the major ticket resellers, you know, but they were all in groups of six. And they were all reasonably priced, you know, $90, $100. Some of them got a little bit above $100, but no crazy prices or anything like that. It was the only tickets for sale really anywhere on the internet that I could find. And then sort of, you know, now you go back and check for those same tickets again. They're all gone. The only thing that's left is a small handful, and they're like $800 or something crazy like that. So this is a tricky kind of year where, you know, for some people, you know, and this came out from the athletic board meeting on Friday, there are more opt-outs for Georgia tickets than probably they maybe have expected. I think more than half the people, slightly more than half, have chosen they didn't want the tickets. So that leaves a smaller pool of people seeking tickets in some cases, if we assume the rest of the SEC is similar. But the tickets themselves are still going to be a pretty high commodity because there are going to be people who are going to want to go to the Georgia-Auburn game. Greg McGarity, athletic director, has told us that those tickets can be resold. It's, following the laws and rules that are in place, just like any other time. That's what he says. Same thing for these other schools as well. At one point in time, I wondered if there might be some sort of mileage restriction on tickets or something like that. NASCAR briefly employed something along those lines. But as it stands right now, there are a small handful of tickets available for these games, and Georgia fans who weren't lucky enough to be granted them by the official means, I'm sure will be trying to do what they can to get in on those in unofficial means there as well. SEC through time. Let me talk about a couple of things here really quickly for a moment. First of all, I thought it was a really fun weekend of college football. There were a ton of upsets. Probably the most high-profile upset, because it was a ranked team that lost, was Iowa State going down to Louisiana. Now, here on this show, we gave you the Raging Cajuns of Louisiana Lafayette as a MyBookie best bet last week, so we'll take some credit for that one here to kind of start the year. Don't ask me about my NFL picks. They didn't do quite as well. But the college picks did pretty well for this past Saturday. The other thing that you can kind of already just expect, that Billy Napier, who's the former Alabama wide receivers coach, now Louisiana Lafayette head coach, is going to be a very hot commodity on coaching searches, to the extent there are coaching searches for the upcoming year because of money and things like that. For the programs that can't afford to replace their coach, Napier, you got to imagine, because he was already doing a good job. He did a really good job last year. Picks up right where he left off. Billy Napier is going to be getting a very big job here at some point in time. It was also an awful weekend for the Big 12 all the way around. Well, you have, Kansas lose to Coastal Carolina, Kansas State lose to Arkansas State. Maybe the most embarrassing performance of all was Texas Tech eking out a win against Houston Baptist. It was not a good weekend for the Big 12, but I guess the two big programs, Texas and Oklahoma, they both rolled, and Spencer Rattler looked good, and Sam Ellinger looked good too. So if you're the Big 12, you'll circle the performance for your biggest programs, but you are left to wonder about the rest of that league after they just got absolutely obliterated by Sun Belt competition up and down the field all weekend long. You probably saw Georgia Tech upset Florida State. They're about a two-touchdown underdog. I think that Jeff Collins is probably putting Tech on a firmer footing than they were prior to his hiring. I'm also just kind of amazed at what Florida State's become as a program. There's no vibe around Tallahassee at all right now. Norvell may be a better coach, an improvement over what Willie Taggart was, remains to be seen, but it might end up being true. But for the moment, there's just no juice in that Florida State program at all right now. Amazing to see them in a dogfight with a team in Tech that barely beat anybody a year ago. Kind of an ugly situation there. Let me shift gears here. SEC, Jamon Osbon, the Texas A&M wide receiver, really one of the better players in that offense, one of the better players in the league. He has announced that he's opting out for the upcoming season. This is another one of those deals where, I'm going to speak out of both sides of my mouth. On the one hand, you got to respect anyone's decision who decides they don't want to play. It is a voluntary activity. On the other hand, it is just becoming a little bit of a weird look for college football that these guys are doing this late in the process. We just had Wade, the Ohio State defensive back, who obviously has no idea what's going on with the Buckeyes. He's made that announcement. They lost an offensive lineman the other day, too. Obviously this late into the process to make this decision here, there's just something about that that's really strange. You kind of go through the offseason period, you get ready to begin the year, and then you decide not to. I respect this decision, but there's still an aspect of that that's pretty strange, and I guess you're left to wonder, what does this do to the Texas A&M predictions that were out there, including my own, expecting the Aggies to be pretty good? For the most part, we have a tendency to overrate one individual absence for college football. This is not a situation like NFL quarterbacks where, there's a huge downgrade in expectations on the basis of just one player. But as I said before, Osbon probably one of the better players in the Aggies offense, so his loss will be hard to mitigate against. And then finally for our SEC through, there is this. Florida Stadium, Ben Hill Griffith Stadium, otherwise known as the Swamp, caught on fire on Saturday. It was, as you probably now know, a dumpster fire. I think we've got some video of this to show. And another brief confession here for me for a moment. So, I wanted to joke about this so bad on Saturday, but I was really afraid to, because it is a fire, right? I was afraid that somebody might be hurt or something like that. And the last thing I want to be doing on Twitter is joking about something where somebody gets hurt. So, by the time I found out that everybody was safe and nobody was hurt, it just sort of seemed like the moment passed. I wrote a little joke out yesterday. Decided not to send it just because it just felt like the time to take a cut on this one was kind of already gone away. Plus, everybody made, basically the same dumpster fire joke anyway. So I'm a little disappointed with myself as the chief Gator hater that I wasn't able to get in on the Florida dumpster fire joke. But you just got to be careful these days. You want to make sure nobody's, hurt or anything along those lines. Here's what I can promise you. I can promise you I'll have much better material come November when it's Florida's national championship hopes that go up in smoke. that's when I'll have my best jokes. That's when I'll have my best material. I'm sorry for missing the moment on Saturday, though, when Ben Hill Griffith Stadium became subject to a brief dumpster fire there, and we'll make that your SEC through. All right, here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door, I want to just kind of do this in no particular order for a moment. So I had a chance to talk to some people who were at the scrimmage on Saturday. Here are the things that I was kind of told that jumped out to them that people kind of noticed about what went on. As I said off the top of the program, I think that the facts as they were presented on Saturday involving the quarterbacks, I think adds to the mystery. I don't think it clears it up. You know, maybe it's as simple as Dwan Mathis just is the guy. Maybe it's more complicated than that. I'm not really quite sure. I think there were some other statements on Saturday that are a little easier to interpret. One of those involves Jermaine Burton. It seems like right now, Burton, the incoming freshman for Georgia, is one of the most important receivers on this team. And maybe that's in part because of the way that Dominic Blaylock's not going to be here anymore. But Burton, who was kind of already facing pretty high expectations, I think now those expectations go up. I was told he was used in a number of ways on Saturday, sometimes on the inside, sometimes on the outside. It seems like Jermaine Burton may be in line for some pretty important playing time for the Georgia Bulldogs. I was told he had a very good day on Saturday. Georgia, I was told, was in two tight end sets some, and when they were in two tight end sets, Darnell Washington was on the field with the number one offense a pretty good bit. I was also told that Washington in a uniform looks as impressive as any Georgia player that certain people have seen in recent memory. That big number zero, big body. I was told that Washington was really a sight to see on Saturday. Maybe if not, you know, catching the football a ton, just looking like a real presence out there on the football field. I was told that the running backs had a pretty good day, both Zamir White and James Cook. Some of that for Cook came in the catching the ball out of the backfield. So for people who, like myself, have been kind of touting James Cook for a pretty big season on the basis of the buzz of the last couple of weeks, I was told the scrimmage on Saturday did very little to kind of dissuade you from thinking that James Cook might be able to have a good year. I mentioned this with John Stinchcomb a moment ago, but it seems like there's some evidence this offense really is a little bit different. I was told that the tempo was pushed some. There were guys in motion, you know, tight ends, even when the two tight end sets. These are not hand-on-the-ground situations. These are, you know, stand-up tight ends. Not always quite, you know, a flex situation, but nonetheless, some differences in that Georgia offense. I was told, because people remember me saying this last week, that, yes, during the scrimmage, Kirby Smart did reference the poor tackling in the Navy game. We said before that Georgia wouldn't fall victim to that kind of stuff because they were going to practice physical. Kirby Smart did reference that. He could be, you know, heard with the microphone that he wears during the practice. He referenced that Navy game and the absence of physicality in that game as a way of challenging his players to be physical during the scrimmage. So Kirby Smart still pushing towards that physicality. There were a couple of high-profile absences. Tyson Campbell was there, did not play. Monty Rice was not present, I was told, at the practice, although it sounds like Rice was attending a funeral, at least according to some people who were a part of that. The offensive line, kind of as expected, at least based on what some of the chatter has been, with Owen Condon getting some work there at right tackle. I guess there may have been a little work from McClendon, some late in the scrimmage at that right tackle spot, but across the board, with Schaefer and Cleveland as your two guards, obviously Trey Hill at center, and Jamari Sire at left tackle, the offensive line, pretty much what you would have expected it would be. I heard that Jalen Carter, the freshman defensive lineman, had a couple of nice moments. That's fun to think about as a guy has a chance to have a big role. And then Matt Landers, Marcus Roseme, Jack Saint having some nice moments with the number two offense as well. So that's the rumors that are out there. Gatorator Updater, 1,416 days. We'll see you tomorrow, Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door.